Well, good morning. It's Scott Wells here with day two of the Mindvention, and we just finished a lecture by Jan Forster, and I'm sitting here with Richard Osterman. Hello, Richard.
How you doing, Scott?
Great, thank you. Good to see you. So didn't get a chance to chat with you yesterday. It seemed like you were covered up with everybody else, always kind of swarming around you.
Well, and we were also trying to get checked in and do a bunch of stuff after traveling.
Now, you say a little bit later you're going to go into the dealer's room, get some things set up. You might going to have a booth?
I brought a few books and what have you.
Okay.
Kind of make a buck while we're out here.
That's why you're here, of course. And you're going to be lecturing and performing, is that right?
That's right. Tomorrow afternoon I'm doing a lecture, and then tomorrow night we're going to have the big show.
Want to give me a little preview of kind of what you're going to be doing, about?
In the lecture?
Yes.
I haven't decided yet.
Okay. I wonder about that. Sometimes guys are structured, sometimes it's...
Well, I mean, I certainly can... have a bunch of stuff I can do.
Of course.
We just got back from France where I did the French convention, and I did a master class there, and I was up in the Michigan area last month doing a bunch of lectures. But I was thinking about maybe becoming controversial here.
Oh, yeah? How would that be?
Well, I don't know. It comes easy to me. We'll see. We'll see. Or maybe I just do a few things. And as far as the show goes, I'm undecided. I was thinking of doing a few of my classic things, but then again, I have this new DVD series coming out, and I might do one or two things from there too.
Just play. You're doing a lot with Lewis Flying Guy, then, aren't you?
This last one is because so many people had come up to me or said over the years, the LNO audience in the studio, they're all rigged, they all react, no matter what you do. So I said, okay, let's try to find some place where I can do a show in front of real people in a real environment, and we came up with Catch a Rising Star in Reno, and
that's a good place
down there, and did a show, and it came out pretty good, so I'm happy about it.
That's good, yeah, because it seems like that the one thing I've heard most about LNO videos is like I recognize the people in the audience, the regular guys.
You know, it's a small community.
Oh, sure.
It just puts out word, hey, I'm going to do a shoot. You'd like to come by and see the show, come by. So it's say people
and to get a free breakfast.
Up. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Have a good time. So.
It is a lot of fun. Yeah. Lewis always does a great job. What are the new projects you're working on then, Richard?
Right now, we did a few things on the video that are kind of old things that haven't been available, so I'm working to try to get those back out. For instance, Alpha Mental is a routine that I did on the videos, and made arrangements. We have Alpha Mentals coming from Germany, in English, of course.
Okay.
So there are a couple other routines that use props and equipment that I'd like to market, in the future, too, as far as the business end goes. And of course, I'm still performing, doing shows. Out in Salt Lake City a few days ago doing a show for a big computer company, and in between, just trying to keep busy. That's all.
Right. That's good. Would you say that your main emphasis really is more towards the corporate market, or are you doing many college shows now? Or?
I've never done college shows.
I thought you did. I was wrong.
Early in my career, I did.
Maybe
I did hypnotism shows. And
that's back in the years when you're still doing comedy clubs, too.
What happened was early in my career, I was doing some college shows, a lot of hypnotism shows. And I did a few comedy clubs, not really a lot. It was a little mixture of everything. And then I had a management company approach me and say, we'd like to book you exclusively, and we have all corporate clients. And I said, okay, let's do it. And that's been the way it's been for about 25, 30 years now.
Good. Yeah, because I remember you coming through Houston years ago and working at the Improv. Richard Hatch and I and the guys came down to see you. And...
Right. Okay. Yeah, that was an exception. I'll tell you what happened there. We had put together an agreement with a publicity agent, and I was at the Improv out in California, and then on the way back we stopped in Houston and we did what was the name of that club? I forget.
It was the Improv.
The Improv.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was a long time ago. But
it was early 80s maybe.
I hit about four or five of them on the way back. I did some TV work and what have you. But that was the exception to the rule. That was something that we just took a month off to do.
Right.
And then after that I went back doing the corporate shows again.
Right.
And so I do maybe one comedy club a year or so. And in this business, you do whatever comes along.
Of course. Now, a lot of the things that I have seen you and Jim Sissy had put out were some PDFs of some excellent marketing materials and things. Now, that has recently, or didn't it get put into a book form, a hardback book, you know what I'm talking about? Seems like if there were some PDFs that were available, downloads for $15 or something.
Oh, yeah. We were one of the first people to start putting out e-books.
Yeah.
And I got tired of them. Mm. And I said, why make it so easy for people to steal them?
So
a few years ago, Jim and I decided no more e-books, but I still felt strongly about doing the sessions that we had already done.
Great material.
And well, thank you. I appreciate that, Scott. So we decided to put them together. Like, for instance, I have a hardcover book called The Trilogy, which was the three books on Making Magic Real, Making Real Magic.
That was it. That was the ones I'm talking about.
And
yes.
Essays. We put those three together. And then a couple of the other books, like I had The Business of Magic, How to Market Yourself and what have you. I put that in another book. So, I went to get them all in print so that they're all there now and no more e-books. So.
That's kind of the way that Banachek and I felt, as far as e-books, it is too easy to steal, and I talked to Danny Garcia, about even, copying the DVDs that he does in Cosmo, talking about how quickly he releases the Real Magic before long. Those are out there and available. Everybody's finding some way of ripping off somebody and getting them for free, I guess, and distributing thousands for free.
Well, you just have to hope that the magic community governs itself.
That's right.
And enough people look down upon people who steal things and say, stop doing that.
When they realize, they're actually taking money out of our mouths, literally,
Right. You eat your money, huh, Scott?
So you were talking about some other projects coming up. You just returned from France. You've been doing a lot of international travel, and most have been around the U.S.?
Or? Yeah, well, what happened is, our kids are growing up now, and they're out of the house.
Yeah.
And so all
kind of a nice thing. I kind of like that. Being
we love them to death, of course, but it's nice that if something comes up, like a trip to France or...
You can pack up and go.
Yeah, just do it. And so we've got some things coming up. Some people have talked to us about doing similar things, maybe in Denmark. We have people in Italy, back in England again, Austria, Israel. I've got all these people I've been talking to who want me to come out there and do a lecture, so we'll see what happens. But.
And let me ask, whenever you are giving lectures internationally, have you had any problems in translation? Some things get lost in translation. Banachek tells me sometimes that some of the subtleties, which he's really trying to emphasize, gets lost.
Exactly, yeah. We just came back from France, and most of the people who were at the my master class spoke pretty good English, although I had Bertrand Leroux was our kind of our guide, and he took us around and what have you, and he also translated for anyone who really didn't understand. But yeah, some things get lost. On my new DVDs, I'm very proud of my snail joke on my new DVDs. I do one joke in my show. It's a snail joke. You'll see if you get it.
Okay.
And so I'm very proud of that, so I thought I would tell that over in France. And
can you tell us here?
Two people. No. So anyways, two people got it and laughed, and the rest kind of looked at me like I was crazy. So, yeah, some things do get lost. The first thing that gets lost always is the humor. You say things that, like, here will get a laugh for sure, at least a chuckle or a smile, and you do it in another country and nothing.
It's a lot to do with the culture. They talk about that, like, in England, that English humor doesn't translate and vice versa from here over to there,
Exactly.
Or some things, let's say, like Jerry Lewis was, slapstick comedy was huge in Japan. They loved him over there, it's not someone's cup of tea necessarily, over here. So it does differ. And even in the U.S., I've heard it said that, what was it, that, if you're performing for a, there's an audience for you, I think it was in Minnesota, said, there's an audience out there because they cast a shadow. They just may not be as reactive. I think everybody reacts a little bit differently. It doesn't mean it's a bad reaction. It's just different for them,
Well, I travel all around the country doing shows, and now I've been living in Kentucky for quite a few years, and I've kind of got that Midwest thing going, on in my life. That's how I...
Because you were in Connecticut before, is that right?
Originally, yeah. And so I enjoy doing shows in the Midwest. I do a lot of shows throughout the country. And the sense of humor, the way people react, is totally different on the East and West Coast than it is in the middle of the country.
Sure.
Everybody's a little bit different. You have to feel them out.
That's one of the
reasons why Kreskin has always been so great. He knows how to fit into whatever area he's going into and make the audience feel that, he belongs there.
And, I think the way that he must do that is the way that he feels out his audience in the first part of it, where he does like his linking fingering or something. I feel as if that he's trying to find the level of the group and what humor is going to work with them and everything. So, he's always talking about, I'm not a magician, but let me just show you this to begin. And then he goes to the mentalist. But I think he's kind of identified what the audience is going to be and how they will react based upon that first trick he does. That is, that if it works, if the audience is what he thinks it's going to be, then it's great. If not, not, hey, I'm not a magician. I'm a mentalist, kind of a thing.
You know, if any of your listeners haven't seen The Great Buck Howard yet, they ought to really get that movie and watch it. You know, it's really a fascinating movie.
Yeah.
You know, of course, a lot is not, actually Kreskin, but he really captured Kreskin's ability to do that with an audience. And I've seen Kreskin many times, and he's just great. I love him.
Sure. Yeah. I remember the first time having met him at a show back in probably the late 70s. First time I met him, and he's still the same. You know, later when he shakes your hand, it's just he's so eager to meet you. You know, he shakes it up and down. That's a great movie. You know, it is.
Yeah, and he never changes. You're right. You know,
it's good. Well, Richard, thank you very much for your time.
Okay,
I appreciate
Scott.
It, and that hope you enjoy the rest of the convention over here. Hope
Thanks
you do
so
very
you,
well.
Scott.
Good seeing you as well. And we'll see next. Last thing, would you say it would be your magic word? If you had something that would it be a word that you use in the show, or something you live by, or a credo, or what would be a magic word for you?
A single word?
Yes. Well, or a phrase. Maybe just a word.
Love your audience.
Love.
I know it sounds so hokey, but I see so many guys who get up there to perform, and it's almost as though they're doing battle with the audience. They have to somehow defeat them when they perform. That's not the way to go. You have to love the audience. You really have to get up
from
there.
From the heart. You just can't say it.
From the heart. You want to show them something that they'll take away, that they'll feel enriched from having seen. And if you have that attitude with you when you perform, they'll love you back. But if you go out there trying to be Mr. Big Shot and show them how clever you are,
and
how much
that.
Yeah, and you're dead. You know,
yep.
You never go anywhere with that kind of attitude.
Yep. You know, that reminds me of an old story about a guy who was working at the zoo. This is a real story. A fellow who was working with the elephants, and it was his first day on the job, and he had said that he knew what he was doing, and he knew how to work with elephants. And whenever he was in the elephant cage, he was trying to clean it, and the elephant kind of approached this man, and he kind of backed off, but the elephant kept going towards him until he finally exited the cage. And the guy who had hired him said, it's your first day and it's your last day, you're fired. And he said, no, why? And he said, because you can never go back in there, because that elephant has sensed that fear, and you whenever you come in, it will always test you from now, because you didn't show that you were strong enough, and that, so it has to be genuine. It has to be something that you're going to be loving your audience, and something that you're going to have to love that and show that you are strong enough to go up against that elephant, then as well,
Well, next time I have an audience full of elephants, I'm going to remember that advice, Scott.
There you go. Okay. Thanks very much, Richard. I appreciate
Thank
your
you,
time.
Scott.
We'll see you again later.
Thanks.
Hey, Scotty out. All right, well, we just finished Pete Puskaparta's lecture over here, and we're sitting in the back getting ready for a lunch break, but I thought, well, I'll just delay these guys a little bit longer for a lunch break. Got Ross Johnson here with me.
Hello,
good
how
to
are
see you?
You?
Great. And Banachek.
Hey, good. How you doing?
Getting kind of tired of hearing his voice over the years, I'm sure.
Then,
too.
But I thought joined at the hip.
It seems. So, anyhow, you're not actually on the schedule to
anything. No, it was a late-minute edition.
Okay, so just kind of hanging out and enjoying friends.
Hanging out and enjoying it. Didn't know I was going to be able to be here till last week. So
yeah. So are you going to be doing something actually on the last evening?
No, in fact, I'm leaving. Unfortunately, I have to leave about 5 o'clock tomorrow.
So. Oh, tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah,
so you're just really in and out.
Yeah.
On your way to do another show?
Yeah, I got a couple of shows in Chicago.
Okay. And I know that's where you're based out of. So do you do a lot of most of your corporate work there, or do you do a lot all over the country?
Corporate work is a little bit down, to be quite honest, as we're hoping. So, but most of it's travel.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. If most, usually the expert's the guy from out of town, it seems like. So, you kind of get to travel. Did you ever do college circuits? I mean, I know like Manitoba.
Very little.
Did you?
I just got involved with the corporate stuff almost right away. And you get into kind of a groove, and that's the way it stays. So I probably have only done a dozen college shows over the years.
Yeah.
I think that's why a lot of guys, magicians, like young guys and that, they don't know who you are, and they should know who you are. That's the amazing thing, because in our business, I mean, you're like one of the gods of mentalism. I'm not saying that lightly. It is absolutely true. We all know Ross Johnson, and we know how he thinks, and we know him as like the ultimate performer. But most of the guys, a lot of guys out there, don't know that. The old timers do, because you're not old, but you know.
Oh, yes, I am.
Well, put in perspective of the old timers that you have known and how close you are to those people. It's really his background. It's truly an amazing background. He has a story about everything and everybody.
I'm really fortunate. I, I, I started doing this in 1974 with an agency. Mm-hmm. Before that, I had a few 5 years of performing.
Well, you say
church,
with an agency, yeah. But the agency and the agents that you've had are like the top of the line.
Yeah, they
in
were.
The business.
They I were. Mean, they were. And but I had an opportunity to meet kind of this crossover stage from nightclub and vaudeville performers and working with them.
In when Chicago, it's great, you know, nightclub.
Yeah,
area.
Yeah, and when I first started working, doing association things, small associations and things like the Shriners and service organizations, there were four acts on every show. And we used to have a vocalist, a comedian, and so I got to meet all these great people.
Can you name a couple of them? Do you mind?
I mean, well, it was Lenny Collier. These are all kind of local Chicago acts, really. Lenny Collier and Sonny Mars and Susan Johnson, no relation to me. She was a vocalist. I think the first show I ever worked, I had Lenny Collier on, was the MC of the show. And we're in the basement of the Medina Temple, the big Shriners organization in Chicago. And I'm young, you know, I'm barely 20 years old. And Lenny Collier is backstage, and he used to do Guzzler's Gin. Red Skelton, Lucy used to do it as Vita Vita Vegemin, where the advertisement for the product, and they got continually drunker and drunker.
Right.
And Lenny says, "Hello there, young guy. He says, you need a little blast before." And he's going to do Guzzler. He's using real gin.
Oh. Wow. Okay.
Not much acting there, then, right?
Yeah. You know. So that was my kind of the initiation of these guys, and I just had a wonderful time. I mean,
and mostly supper clubs, I guess. Kind of thing back.
Well,
then.
It was mostly organizational.
Like you said, Medina Temple and those kinds of
club
things.
Club dates, you know.
Because they still do have some supper club
they're
around Chicago.
They're kind of coming back a little bit, too. In fact, they just opened the new one in Chicago.
Which one's that?
I don't recall the name. Denise McGowan, who's an agent in Chicago, used to manage Byfields when I was working at Byfields in the Ambassador East. She's kind of in charge of doing this. We've got this great, great venue now that opened in Chicago called Main Stage, MAYNE. It's up on the north end of Chicago.
Yeah.
And they put $7 million into the interior of this place. And it's just gorgeous. So I'll be there for the third time at the end of October.
So you're doing, like, novelty acts?
Yeah. They're doing, you know, a vast array of novelty acts, a lot of comedy, and then music from classical to blues to rock.
And then you get booked for a month at a time? Or something?
Usually it's a weekend. They're doing a weekend at a time.
Okay. It is a dinner theater type.
They have an adjacent restaurant. If you go and eat in the restaurant, you get prime seating in the showroom after dinner, and then they serve cocktails and a few hors d'oeuvres in the showroom.
Is that open to anybody, or is it a membership?
No, that's open to anyone. It's called Main Stage, MAYNE.
North whereabouts?
Morris Avenue in what they call East Rogers Park, so it's on the north side of Chicago, up by Loyola University, and they get a big university.
What are you going to be
there? Is there a website?
I'll be there the 29th. Yes, there is a website.
Which you remember
the name? MAYNE stage.com.
Okay.
And you're there when?
The 29th of October. It's the Halloween thing.
Halloween? Okay. So that seems to be appropriate, I guess.
It's my third time. They had me there their opening week a year ago, June, and I was back there last Halloween, and then this Halloween also.
Now how long will your show be?
I have an opening act that's doing 20 to 30 minutes, and then I'll do an hour and 15 minutes after a brief intermission.
Yeah. You know, Don Weiberg had told me up in Chicago, I guess, about some of the places that are still around. I want to say like Excalibur or something.
Excalibur is a big club that's in downtown Chicago. Mm-hmm. It's... that's kind of it's kind of a little juicy there. So
now, why did you decide to get into mentalism? Initially, right?
Well, I got involved with magic back in 1963 when I was a freshman in college, just starting school.
You are older than I thought.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I just turned 66.
Wow, you look like you're only 46.
Well, it's for him not having a real job, you know. at that orientation week, basically. What it was. There was a guy there that was part of the orientation staff, and it turns out it was Eugene Berger. And he did some. So I've known Eugene actually longer than I've known my wife. Met my wife the same week.
Wow.
So that started my interest in magic, and I got back to Chicago. I worked for Tom Palmer / Tony Andruzzi and the Elders Magic because he came up from Dallas after.
Right, when he was married to Gloria.
Yeah. And there's a whole story there. And then I went to Jay Marshall's and worked with Jay and Francis for 4 or 5 years as their counterman. And when I finished college and got a job teaching, I, of course, left. And they were really so kind to me. They were some of the greatest people in the world. Very, very
Jay
supportive.
And Francis.
Jay and Francis. Supportive of what I wanted to do. And when I was young and told my parents, you know, that you know the look you get when you tell your mom you want to be a professional magician. They assured her that this was
like Jay used to say, "What was that? I want to grow up and be a magician.
Yeah,
you can't do both.
You can't do both."
Yeah.
You know, so.
But you had again decided mentalism rather than magic.
Yeah, well, I went to a Abbott Magic Fest in Colon, Michigan.
Get together,
and it was probably mid 65, 66, and there was King and Zarita. They were a two-person Kodak, and they were quite quite proficient. And she was so regal, and he took a kind of invisible position. And they're doing it, standard. I don't want to say standard because it was just a marvelous act. So we're in the high school gymnasium. There's 500 mostly magicians, and I'm realizing as I'm watching this that they were clamoring to be the next one chosen, and they had forgotten completely about methodology. They were so into it. And I just said, "Well, this is the way to go."
Huh.
And my wife had really no interest in
doing two-person mind reading.
So I developed a single-person mind reading act, and the first paid program I got, I must have gotten 10 or 25 bucks, was booked for me by Alan Ackerman at Elmhurst College.
Oh.
Yeah, Alan was a good friend of mine, and still is. In fact, I'm hopefully going to get together with him tonight because he's living out here in Vegas.
Yep.
And it just kind of grew from there.
Is Alan working anywhere around the casinos?
Not that I'm aware of.
I don't know either. He's
still teaching.
I thought maybe he might come by. Oh, is he?
Yeah, he'll be here tonight, later tonight.
Yep.
He has a late class, he said, so he'll be here about 10 o'clock. So we hope.
Is he like UNLV or something, or where is he teaching?
Yeah, I think it's UNLV.
Okay.
I have to get a definitive update on that.
And you had taught where?
Chicago Public Schools.
Okay.
20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just shy of 20 years.
Yep.
And left teaching in 1986.
Good timing.
Yeah. And there you go. Yeah.
Transition? Was it a
no,
solid
because,
transition?
No, because what I did, it was kind of a gradual thing. We saved money. I saved all the money I made teaching. And tried to live on what I was doing, for about a year.
Yeah.
What I was making from entertainment, and we thought, this was working, so I can leave this.
That's a good way of doing it. You just didn't decide, I'm quitting my job and doing this tomorrow.
No,
you made a good transition. You have to have a plan.
Yeah, I think so.
Anything that in particular that you would say is your favorite effect that you have?
Question answering without a doubt. I think that's the essence of what mentalism is, and I think you have to if you're developing any kind of mental act, what you have to have is this feeling with the audience that the audience members can feel I'll be the next one called.
Yeah.
And so question answering does that. And there's a couple of other effects that perhaps do that also. But unless you get that, then it's strictly them watching this happen.
And they're interacting with your Q&A.
Yeah. On your Q&A, you've probably played with everything at some point. Are you still doing what you originally started with, though? Because I find that a lot. Like, I come with something, and for some reason I choose that. And I'll play with all kinds of different things, and I'll add little bits and pieces. But usually, more often than not, it's where I started is where I end up. Almost.
Well, the development of my Q&A, I remember the first Q&A program I did. I did a routine directly out of Tarbell Course. And, by the way, if you're interested, the Tarbell Course is a great introduction to mentalism, perhaps even better than the Jinx Corindus 13-7. It's an introduction because Tarbell, being who he was a great writer.
Yes,
and
he
also he had pattern lines.
He was from Chicago. Did you ever have a chance to meet him?
I never met him. Yeah, okay. I never met him. Yeah. He was a naturopath in Chicago. But to answer Banachek's question, I did that, and then I was working in the magic shop too, and did a lot of talking with Johnny Thompson. Mm-hmm. And then if you really want to find the essence of a lot of mentalism, J.G. Thompson Jr. he was, I think, of his time as prolific,
no relation to Johnny Thompson.
No relation to Johnny Thompson at all, as far as I know. But he was so, you know, almost as prolific as Max Maven and or Stuart James. I mean, if you look in the older text, you'll see his name all over the place. And so I did a teaching class at Jeff McBride School this week.
Uh-huh.
And I gave them kind of a challenge. If you want to find some great mentalism and question answering stuff, go search out J.G. Thompson Jr. Well, that'll keep you busy for 5 years.
So going back to my question, though, did you come back to, or have you gone off in other directions?
Yeah, I kind of went off in another direction.
I'm not asking you to give away what
no,
you're doing.
No, no. Yeah. I'm just trying to get a time frame here. Probably by 70, I had a method that I've been using all along as the base. I mean, I've played around with others, but my method of choice I've been doing since about 1970, 1971.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972, Al Coran, I think it was 72 that Al Coran passed away, and he was being handled by Harry Breen. If those in magic know Celeste Evans,
sure.
Harry Breen was Celeste's husband.
Oh, I did not know that.
You know, and he was a former harmonica player who...
Like Johnny Thompson.
Played with Johnny Thompson.
Yeah. And he was kind of an abrasive guy, but he was always right. And he was looking for a mentalist to replace Al Coran.
Yeah.
And the first person he went to was Simon Aronson.
And Simon's good.
Yeah, Simon is terrific, but had no interest in doing professional. He was, you know, kind of a high power attorney,
and
his work. He did the two person code act. It's a terrific act, and still is.
Yeah.
And his interest also was in, you know, card magic, but he put Harry on to me, and then Celeste came out and saw me working in a church basement, and. As abrasive as Harry was as an agent, because he was typical. You know, he looked like Woody Allen in Broadway Danny Rose. We used to call him Blinky because his eyes were going crazy all the time. But I'll tell you, if you were getting started in showbiz, and this guy, I think a lot of acts didn't like him because he was so abrasively correct. You know, you got to do it this way. You can't do it this way.
Right.
He told Al Coran, get those blank and linking rings out of that out of your routine,
uh-huh.
You know, and go into something that is more fitting for American audience as a mentalist.
Right.
And Al listened to him. End up doing his opening was with the invisible deck and with an index follow up that was just terrific.
Any advice you'd have for people who are getting into mind reading or mentalism? Yeah,
stay out of magic.
That's right. Yeah, don't do it.
You know, you live your love. That's all.
Yeah.
And you got to make sure, you know, if you're going to make a commitment to do this full time, you better love it.
Right.
And because my proudest thing really is that I had three sons, and I was able to put them all through school without ever taking a loan on the money they made doing mentalism.
That's
and
right.
I think that
speaks
that
for itself.
Right there.
Yeah.
You know, so it can be done.
Yeah. And then finally, I was going to ask, what would be your magic word? If there was something that you live your life by as a credo, a word, it doesn't have to be necessarily your personal.
Family for me.
Family. Okay.
That comes first.
Yeah.
You know.
Great. That's what I want to hear. Ross, thank you very much. Benicek,
my pleasure.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
Okay. That's enough from Ross Johnson, Benicek, and myself. Scotty out.
Wait a minute. That's enough.
I just want to introduce here
with Leor
Session.
I'm Sushard.
Okay.
In Switzerland.
And you got several apps that are out there right now, or some that are about to come out.
I'm sorry, I've got some of those.
I need to talk about some of those.
I'd
love to.
Straight there.
Tell me. What's the a couple of effects from the apps you got out? A
couple of the effects.
One like the fan, for example, you were showing there a while ago.
It's based on a very old principle, of course.
Yes.
But the idea is that it's an industrial fan that moves objects.
moves object. The fan will actually, the
cigarette papers
swirling on the on the screen. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now there was also a video. You can go and take a look at that. Where is the video? Yeah. On YouTube.
It's on YouTube. It's not on YouTube yet because it's not out yet.
Okay, so you're gonna wait. When's that gonna be released?
I have no idea.
Sometime before the end of the year. Okay.
Probably.
And then a couple of other things.
Well, things are simple. Those are basically ideas that are for the mass market. It's those are tricks based on mind reading effects. So the fan imitates telekinesis.
Yes.
The candles, if you haven't seen yet, candles imitates mind reading.
There's right. One with so the candles will go out.
Guessing your phone number imitates guessing someone's phone number.
Right.
So
okay.
Each one of them imitates a different aspect of mind reading.
Right.
Mental instincts. It's kind of cool.
I do like that.
Yeah.
I do like that. They were
and it's simple. They're all simple. I'll show you the candles afterwards. You like it.
Okay. Yeah. It has to be a little bit quieter environment. Can't do that in the bar or anything, obviously. Or
it's noise sensitive.
Yeah. So anyhow, just for those of you listening, by the way, we're just finishing up lunch over here at a Chinese restaurant, and so Lior is here. And some of the other people just joining us over here at the table. Ken Karmilovich, Ken Weber, Ross Johnson, Panacek. So it's to take a photo. So just kind of hear some of the guys' conversations here.
Yeah. That didn't look very exciting.
But you tell the story about playing softball?
You remember everything.
Store all this stuff. That's why I use it. That's why I use my memory in the show, but I don't do any memory stuff.
All right. You
got to look at the rings to see what is doing.
He was just. Yeah. He was just saying about we all played the Playboy Club. Well, you didn't. You played it
one night. One night.
I played the Playboy Club in New Jersey. And he remembers the story.
If I played the Palms, does it count?
Counts.
Counts. Yeah, also played
the club. You're in the club.
I'm in the club. Okay.
You can sit at the table. So he remembers the story that I had been there many times, and it's a resort, this particular one. These girls are glamorous. I mean, they look super hot.
Is that one in Madison? Is that Madison, Wisconsin?
No, in New Jersey. Great Gorge. Great Gorge, New Jersey. When I walked in, there was one standing behind the camera. Mark and I thought it was a mannequin. That's how perfect it looked.
Thank you. Anyway, the story that he remembers is I told my friends that after I'd been there many times, they invited me the next day, like on Sunday afternoon, to have a
charity softball.
Employee softball game. And you see these same girls that are so gorgeous and perfect, and they're just in shorts and t-shirts with no makeup. They're just kids. They're just plain, ordinary kids. I was shocked. I said,
is the same power of Photoshop. When you see newspapers, when you see the actual model, you see her ass a little bigger. You see, is there something wrong with her? Run. How's it going? Everybody calls me Sushi.
What is that?
It's Sushard.
Oh, Sushard. So
it's
Sushi,
like,
okay.
A nickname, yeah. Like,
no, you.
Yes, I'd love to talk about electronics.
I'm going to head out.
I'm
going
to go to my room for a quick second.
So, I'm going to get a quick picture. Hold on.
What's the best thing? Mongolian
picture. Can you take a picture of us? Somehow.
You like your Mongolian beefies, yeah.
There you go. Steve, try to adjust to get inside.
You'll be bigger than everyone.
Yeah, the back way, yeah. Back.
I'm trying to make myself smaller, all right?
Okay. Slowly. Use the zoom. Squeeze in.
Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Take one more, just in case. You don't
one
know.
More. Steve was burping. Do it again.
Looks great. That's great. Steve looked too big in the picture.
No,
the perspective.
His hair.
I didn't say anything. You did. You did.
Hey, guys, you know what?
That's a good
one time. That's good.
Try with yours.
Maybe I'll send you a dude. It's a little lot focused, you see? A little bit?
Okay.
There we go.
Yep.
1, 2, 3.
And Paul, hold on. One last one.
All right, I'll catch you guys later. What happens to emails? I mean, I get...
Hold on. This is the last one.
Another one.
Yep. This is an Android. This is a really technical picture.
Got it.
I felt it. You can hear them.
No, it'll say. Thank you.
Okay.
What the hell? Look. It won't stop.
I'll send you mine. You send me yours.
Yeah.
I'm going to send that to you.
Good enough.
Do we want to go to the diner instead?
I'll show you yours. I wrote that for Bob Cassidy 40 years ago. Now it's made the rounds.
It's been in movies and stuff.
Not in the middle of the show.
Exactly.
Where you both have your design duplication. You're back to back. And I, okay, you show yours? Okay. You turn around? I'll show you mine.
Maybe you will notice. One more? There you go.
What the hell? I'm going to start charging.
Guys, you mind one more picture?
I already did.
Okay, Ted, here we go.
Ted, change yourself. Ted. It's a teleportation effect.
Ready.
I'm behind Ross's hair. Nobody will see me.
Action.
Okay, one more.
Thank you so much, dear. Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
let's go there. We'll be quick and easy, then we'll go up.
You know that fact? I'm looking for something. Somebody told me that Ted invented it, and then he said he did it. Can add the number with letters.
My wife on the phone. Put letters.
Another one. Look at it. Tell me if you see a word.
Yeah,
and then I took it. And I do it, two people write different letters, then they exchange it.
He reminds me.
And each one opens the other one and looks at the words, and they look at the same thing.
It's
kind of cool. So I'm looking for the one who... For the first
year. Lior, what?
And every name you
wrote. Lior
at liorsouchard.com.
Okay,
S-U-C-H.
A-R-D.
A-R-D. A-R-D. A-R-D.
It can be exhausting.
Perfect.
Okay, got it.
So we'll talk this first.
Is the dealer room open?
Yeah.
Let's go see some electronics before.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Some pre-electronics.
Pre-lecture electronics.
Ted has a lot of bad. It would be something like that, Ted. So that's probably why.
You invented which one?
To
add a number.
Yeah.
Instead of writing numbers, that add them and predict the number.
Well, we're in the dealer's room then right now following the panel discussion that was on electronics. I'm here with Jan Forrester. Jan, hello.
Hello.
And you're from Germany.
Yeah.
Exactly. Whereabouts in Germany? Which city?
The city is called Göttingen. It's a smaller city. It's close to Hannover, so it's in the northern part of Germany.
Yep, like north of Mannheim?
Yes.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I got a general idea. I was there several years ago.
2 hours from Frankfurt.
Okay. I know what you're talking about then. Excellent lecture, by the way, this morning.
Thank you.
I thought that was really good. I wanted to just touch base with you over here since you were one of the presenters at the MindVention. This MindVention is the eighth one. How many of these have you attended?
This is my third one.
Your third one, okay.
Yeah.
And I remember it seemed like you'd attended last year and performed, and that's why I guess Danny saw that and said, hey, we need to get some more of this.
I don't know exactly. I did not perform here. I just did something, of course, downstairs at the bar.
That and was where it was,
and,
yes.
And Bob Cassidy, and so some people saw what I do, and so Danny Archer said, we bring it, and then, of course, some people like Bob Cassidy said, hey, this guy's really good and bring him, he's a professional. And so Danny asked me, and I said, Danny, no problem, because I would I would come anyhow.
Right. It seems like that so many of the things that are being done are
I wouldn't say variations, but they are, nor improvements, but they are based upon other people's things, like, you know, Bob Cassidy's ideas and whatnot, and different people were talking about, well, this was, you know, based on this and inspired by this and or whatever. How do you come up with your ideas? What is your creative base? Do you take some ideas after you read this and say, I can kind of improve on this, or how do you...
Yeah, basically that's the base, because I read a lot. Mm-hmm. I hate DVDs, I have to say.
Good man.
DVDs doesn't help us in mentalism, so I have a huge library at home, and I perform quite often, and then I see a problem, so I want something that has to be shorter, and I come up with something, and sometimes I don't know that I have probably read something similar before, but I then always do, of course, research before I put out lecture notes, so I can give proper credits, but it is a constantly process, thinking about improving things. You cannot invent the wheel, really. It's impossible.
Sorry, everything is out there.
Mm-hmm. But everything has somewhere its roots, but there's still enough possibilities to combine things you know, and then you come up with something that's quite new.
Now, when most guys put out lecture notes, and after they put it out, it's almost stale already because they have some improvements that they've been working on. Do you find that's the same thing? I mean, after you publish something, it's like, oh, well, here's another idea, you know, that I thought about since, or I tweaked this or that.
And, always. Yeah. To be honest. Sure. It's finished. And you put out the lecture notes, and maybe sometimes a week later or a month later, you see, oh, I have improved this again. And if now next time I produce the same lecture notes, I have to add this constantly. It's always the process. This process never ends.
You got a very nice and engaging personality on stage, and it's very fun. You were saying in German, you're even more funny.
Yeah.
Now, where do you perform, actually? What is it like? As we're talking here, I just got a thing. Colin McLeod just commented. he's enjoying our posts over
this
here.
So great.
That's good.
I do nightclubs. I do cruise ships. I do corporate shows. So quite a lot. Hotels, sometimes monthly contracts. So I'm pretty busy.
Now, when you're saying cruise ships, are those the Rhine cruises?
No. Rhine cruises, they're very popular in Germany, but seldom they take entertainers.
Oh, is that right? Because I guess that there are other kinds of things they're doing for dinners and stopping in vineyards and whatnot.
Special events. I have done, if a firm hires a ship for one night, I have done actually a few weeks ago, then I just joined the ship somewhere, I entertain a corporate group for 1 hour, and then I leave the ship again. But cruising, I talk about like being aboard a ship for 2 or 4 weeks.
And are you, do you perform in English or in Germany or German? Or I mean,
mainly in German, but I worked for, it's a company not existing anymore, a British company, hello Colin, Cunard Line. And I was very busy for them because they had already a percentage of like 30-35% German speaking guests. Uh-huh. So I did my shows bilingual, so like 65% in English and 35% in German. I'm lucky because I speak a few languages more than not so many entertainers.
What do you speak?
I speak also French, Spanish, Italian, and Portuguese.
Oh, my goodness.
And that keeps me also additional busy. If they're trade fairs or so, then they need somebody. We need somebody who speaks German, English, and maybe some Italian. Then there are not so many they can select.
And there you are. That's right,
And there I am.
Limited number of people, so you're kind of in a great category then. And so other types of performances. Now, in nightclubs, are nightclubs still fairly popular in Europe?
I do very rarely. I have done a lot in Italy because until, let's say, the late 19th, there were around 400 nightclubs in Italy, and there were many good nightclubs.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, they're very few. They are good. And I'm getting 53 now. I have two kids, and, and nightclubs is something I do very seldom. Actually, I try to avoid them because they're not as classy as they have been like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Now, how do you balance that? Now, as you mentioned, with your family, with children, and trying to travel and all that. And I'm asking that question because I know there are a lot of guys who are out there doing this on a part-time basis, and they're thinking, how would I actually do this full-time, and how do I balance my personal life and spending time with the kids?
First of all, I'm very lucky because my wife, she worked with me 10 years on stage.
Oh, good.
And she knew exactly she marries me.
Yes, she knows what she's getting into.
Yeah. And, of course, sometimes my kids don't see me 2, 3, 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. I try to avoid longer contracts than 4 weeks, and until now, I did most of the time, I succeed. On the other hand, And when I'm home, I'm home.
Yes, you spend time
more than somebody who probably weeks, 5 days a week.
Right.
So, okay, sometimes they don't see me 2, 3, 4 weeks, I know, but once I'm home, they have a papa who has real time for them.
I was talking to Ross Johnson a little bit earlier about how that he got involved into mentalism and whether he really got like magic, and then, you know, some guys like magic and then they kind of drift into mentalism. What about you? Did you like magic first, or did you like mentalism straight away, or
yeah,
how did you get into
funny. It almost doesn't sound true, but of course, I started as a magician, but already when I was 10, 12, I started when I was 8, I was always interested in mentalism. I always liked the effect, like book tests.
Yeah.
My mother, she's now 75, she remembers, and I have pictures at home she made when I did a performance for our family, that I did already a sort of book test. I was maybe 10 or 11, so I was always interested in mentalism.
Uh-huh.
And meanwhile, it's 75% of my... What I do is mentalism. I have two webpages, one as a magician, one as a mentalist. But mainly I do mentalism. And I have to be honest, it doesn't sound nice because I started as a manipulator. Most magic is boring today for me.
For you.
So,
okay.
So I think because when you get older, I think mentalism is... easy to say it is magic for intelligent and adult people.
Right.
And I really, this is,
Now, have you ever done some walk around strolling mentalism?
Yes, seldom, but it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I prefer stand up. Even when I was working mainly as a magician, I hated table hopping. I have done only when I couldn't make big money with it.
Right.
Because I want more attention. So even on cruise ships, I went in the casino and it was advertised in the program. I did 30, 35, up to 40 minutes staying behind one table.
Yeah.
And not moving around, and I entertained only people that want to see close-up magic. I don't want to annoy the people. And the other advantage is I can do longer routines because the people that enjoy my job, they stay 10, 15, 20, sometimes 30 minutes with me.
Yeah.
And I can show more because as a table hopper, it doesn't matter if you do mentalism or not. You have the best 5 minutes per table. And to be honest, I studied 8 years piano, and I don't see good musicians going from table to table and say, "May I play?" I think, why should we do it?
Yeah, they're wandering mariachis we have, like, you know, from Mexico.
But we don't take them seriously.
I think
it diminishes the respect for our art.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. This is my personal opinion. I remember when I read Darren Brown's Pure Magic many years ago. He says at one point, table hopping is prostitution. I think it's hard, but sometimes, I think he's right.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes, it's a bit too hard, but the direction is correct.
Well, as we wrap up, let me just ask you about your magic word. What would be your word? Is there something that you would use when you perform, a magic word? Or is there like a credo or something, a motto that you live by or something that... it could be a word or a phrase or something.
My phrase would be, if I could restart again, I would do exactly the same what I do.
You would?
Yeah. I'm happy with my life.
You love it. Yeah. You have a real passion for it, and the candle hasn't burned out.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So where do you see yourself, say, 15 years from now? More of the same what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so.
You may be right here 15 years from now.
Yeah, for sure. I will try to come next year again because this is probably my favorite congress.
It is a lot of fun,
it is.
Isn't it?
But the convention is fantastic. It's small. It's dedicated. You talk to many people. I love it.
Yeah, and there is a lot of camaraderie, and everybody has the same interest, and it's such a tight-knit group, you know, here, so it is very good. Jan, thank you very much.
Okay.
I appreciate it a lot. That was Jan Forster. The Scotty out. So, we are in the bar afterwards over in Jackson. We just finished with Rick Mal's lecture. It was pretty good. You stuck around for it. I got Johnny Thompson. Say hello.
Hi, it's Johnny Thompson, the great Tom Sony, but you can call me great.
That's your nickname.
That's, yeah. And Robert's here, too, of course, who the one of the organizers.
Call me Nick.
You can call me Nick. And Greg Lancaster over there, then, too.
Not so great.
That's his opinion.
And I value my opinion.
Someone should your values.
I've been meaning to talk to you about that.
Hey, we're having fun. fun, guys.
We are. This, you should be here. This is the place to be, you know, to kind of hang out at a good convention. Now, you kind of come and go. You've attended this convention in the past. It's not your first.
Yeah. No, but I've been to about four of them.
But do you do much mentalism?
I used to do a mental act. In fact, they told me you had a thing on Al Coran yesterday, and I was somebody, you know, I got into mentalism because of Al Coran. Yeah, he had a manager named Harry Breen, was married to Celeste Evans.
Harry Breen used to book me.
Well, before Harry Breen used to book you, he was a harmonica act.
That's right.
And he was the worst harmonica act. Not that he couldn't play or anything, but if they told him to do 15, he'd do 30 or 40. If you were behind him, it was god-awful.
I think Ross Johnson just talking about this yesterday.
Marina Towers.
Yeah, and so when he became a manager, everybody who was an actor was happy because they didn't have to follow him.
Yeah, right.
But Harry came up to me and he said, I'm representing Al Coran, and Al wants to do trade shows, and I was heavily into trade shows.
Yeah, right.
So I got him booked on a few months of trade shows, and then he got canceled. And so I went over and met with him, and I developed a mental act because I had to fulfill all those dates. And that's how I got in. I did mentalism for about 3 years. Then I started using it out for club dates and everything else.
Did you do some of the stuff like Al Coran's main?
Well, that's where I took my Nemo wallet and combined it with Al's Encore, because Al had a thing with a wristwatch. And I said, Al, I got something better that'll fit with your Encore. And the Coran medallion, I worked it out so I wore it and I could take it off, you know.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't have to go. It was always in view. And,
during the whole show. So was that like your finale then? Did you?
What I closed with was a question, you know, question Q&A. And answer, Q&A.
Yeah, I did a Q&A.
I did a great J.G. Thompson. In fact, Ross Johnson closes with it. You know, I went and saw Ross doing mentalism. And afterwards, I said, Ross, this is great. You really do a wonderful job. He said, this is all the stuff you gave me and talked to me about when I was working behind the counter. He says, you gave me a career. I just forgot about it. No, I gave him a lot of stuff I was doing and told him about it and so forth. And, so I did mentalism for many years. Now I had been about 15 years, and I got booked to do a bunch of sales meetings. Since I had to do so much material, I went back and put the mind reading
out. Sales meetings?
Yeah, well, I did it as a closing show for them. And I remember Bev Bergeron came in to see it, and he came in just at the end, and he said, I don't know what the hell you did, but you got a standing ovation out of Q&A, so it can't be all bad.
No, are you kidding me? It can't be all bad, yeah.
So I did mentalism for about 3 or 4 years.
And then did you do much mentalism at all during trade shows? I mean,
well, that's what I did.
But, I mean,
and then I turned Jim Conover onto doing it, and because I knew Tim when he was 18, and when he went getting trade shows, I said, well, I got to tell you, I started doing mentalism, and it's better than magic. If you can tie it in, boy, it's great.
And, so I guess my question is, why did you kind of make that circle and come back to doing magic? And that's
well, because, you know, the act I always made my living with, doing the... So I used mentalism as if I had to do... especially in sales work and so forth, and trade show work, I could use that as a backup to the magic as well.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but the act was always a killer, so you don't want to
give
that
up. The act paid a lot of money for me over the years, you know.
Donnie and Marie.
Wow.
Oh, my God, I was on the floor.
Wow.
I thought you were so funny.
And you know, what was funny about that is that they wouldn't let me say I was Polish.
I remember
that. The guy who was standard in practices was also standard in practices for Roland and Martin's Laughing. And there used to be a guy, Bob Glimsky, that was here. You remember the auto dealer?
Yeah.
Well, he went on and Laughing to refute the Polish jokes, and of course they turned it into a soul session of Polish jokes. And this guy had okayed it, so when I get on, he's still standing in practice, I get in Donnie and Marie, and he says, he can't be Polish. So they had to introduce me as Europe's foremost magician. And And it got down to the last thing was he wouldn't let him use my music, the Warsaw Finale, because he thought it would be derogatory to Polish people.
Are you kidding me?
Now, the guys who hired me for the show were Sandy Krinsky and my friend who just passed away, Chet Dowling. And they were both Polish. And so, even though they gave all this crap, what they did is, in the TV Guide breakdown of the show, they wrote Poland's Finest Magician. Yeah. They put it all in there. And then, for the Writers Guild, they wrote a whole article about this guy saying that the Warsaw Finale would be derogatory to Polish people. So they rammed it up his head. But it backfired on me.
I can't put a tarantella. I'm Italian for right now.
Well, it backfired on me because I get to pitch a show for Caesars in Atlantic City. And now the guy who's in charge of entertainment for the series, I mean for Caesars, is the same guy who was standard practices. And I walked in and I went, goodbye.
Yeah.
I knew it was out the
Turn
window.
Right around, yeah.
That there was supposed to be like a TV show that was going to be like a family of magicians, you were involved in that, never did see air.
Yeah.
So what happened to that? You want to tell them?
I got to remember what show this. Oh.
I think Carl Ballantyne was.
Yes. It was written for Carl and I and Ed Alonzo.
Yeah.
It was going to actually be four generations of magicians.
Oh, how cool.
So Carl, it was.
Carl was a writer.
It was. I was a grandfather, and Ed Alonzo was a father, and we had this young little boy who was. The son, and Carl was the great-grandfather who was a ghost living in a trunk in the attic.
Yeah.
It was a great premise for the show. It just they didn't. I suggested a real big-time writer, but the woman who was behind it didn't come up with the money. And
the producers can be a pain in the butt.
Well, yeah, you know that old story about the writer who was making her soup. Yeah, that's the whole story.
To do it, but they don't want to pay any. Okay. That's too sad. It seemed like that was a great premise.
Yeah,
I thought it was.
The premise was so good, it could have made it really well.
Used to belong to a club called the Three Sheeters.
Yeah, I
with Bobby Sargent and Carl Ballantyne used to come. So one time I'm in there, I'm probably 25 years old, and he says to me, "You go to the track?" I said, "No." He says, "Come on, let's go." So we go in his car, and we go to, I think it was Maywood or something, and he's got a shopping bag with $2 bills in it.
Wow.
And he says, "Let's go bet." And he's got this freaking shopping bag.
Carl was, he was hooked on the track.
Yeah, I know.
He named his daughter. Sarah is for Saratoga. That's her full name.
Right?
I'm not kidding you. Absolutely. Yes. How hooked on the racetrack he was.
I never had so much fun, my guy.
Yeah.
God, I thought, what's in the shopping bag? What the hell has he got? He's taking $2 bills out of there.
He used to call me Stosh, you know.
Stosh.
Yeah.
Stosh you.
Yeah. Come on, Stosh. You know.
He was a funny guy.
Oh. What a brilliant act. And the other brilliant animal act was Bob Williams and Louie. You remember him?
Yeah, sure.
And this was the dog that did nothing.
Oh, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
My favorite line in the act, after like 8 minutes, the dog is just sitting there and he's asking him to do shit. And he looks and he goes, "Well, he's thinking about it."
Oh. Oh, my God.
Well, in theaters, you know, I started in five-a-day theater, the Paramount, the Roxy, the Capitol in Washington. We closed the Hippodrome in Baltimore. You know, it was the largest theater in the country, bigger than Radio City.
Of course, that was a huge
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I chased the Ravine around Canada doing theaters.
Oh, yeah.
We had this agent back then. It was a funny story because Peter and I... each other, you know, in fact we both lived here. But in Canada, what they would do is they put him in the big theater, then they'd bring me in 2 weeks later, like at the biggest nightclub in town.
Yeah.
And they started this thing about Ravine hates Robert Allen, and Robert Allen hates Ravine. And every time we go somewhere, for something important to say. I said, oh, he's puffed up. What is he? He's, draws big crowds in the street. And I packed my place.
Sure.
And then we come back, and he said, how'd you do? I said, I made great money. He said, me too. Everybody in Canada thought we hated each other for like 5 years.
Oh, that's funny. And Peter was, people don't realize what a big star he was.
Oh, my God, he was
huge. You know, there's a plaque in one of them that he had the biggest gross anyone ever had.
He was huge.
And, and the star was Hopper, Peter Raveen.
Oh, yeah.
The stars behind him who had lesser, but, you know, second, third, were major names, but Peter was a bigger star over
there. Yeah. I went to one of the theaters in Victoria Island, and they had a poster backstage, and I copped it. I got a hold of it. So I rolled it up, and for years I had it at my house. So Peter calls me and says, let's go to dinner. So we all go to the Sterling Club.
Yeah.
Right? And the Sterling Club, very fancy with the waiters and all this shit. And there's a candle, you know, in the front of the table. I said, you know, I've had this poster for 20 years. Will you sign it?
Sure I will.
He opens it up. He's signing it. It catches on fire.
The
waiters are coming with water, and I go, leave it alone.
Are you still taping?
So now I got it framed. There's a big hole in this one.
You got history with it.
You kind of got carried away.
Yeah, I can tell. I went to go get another beer, and yeah, he did. The guy says to me, he says, well, it's Lime Budweiser. Like, that's normal.
Lime Budweiser?
Yeah, Lime Budweiser.
Warm.
No, I didn't say Budweiser.
Why would it's
Lime
terrible. Yeah, like,
it's horrible.
It was. It tastes like it had bleach in the glass or something.
It tasted like cider with bleach in it.
Oh, that's no good.
That was bad.
Yeah. That's why I don't drink beer. It all tastes like cider.
Yeah. It's like
Yeah, but men are lucky. They drink this, it comes out the same color. That's why I'm drinking the brown stuff.
Richard Osterlund?
Hey, Richard. At my age, it's brown.
Yeah. We missed.
We'll do it again. And I told you, I can't see either.
I'll be right back.
Anyhow, okay. Okay. No worries. So anyhow, we were just kind of talking about the convention. So Banachek, I'll tell you what, let me just kind of spin this around over here this way so we can kind of get everybody's opinion. I wanted to kind of recap, like today, a little bit about the, we finished up with Rick Miles.
We started with Jan Foster, or Jan Foster.
Jan Foster.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was
great, fantastic, some wonderful stuff. Pete, who I've known for a while, was great. I mean, he did a great, great job, too. You know, it's one of the reasons, no offense to you guys, but it's one of the reasons I really didn't want to work it this year is because you had such great talent that I wanted to sit back and just enjoy it. You know, you always have good stuff, but I looked at it.
Try hard to get the guys that you get to see all the time.
Yeah.
Because they're working, and we want to, you know, expose them to the best that we can get.
You do that time and time. Like every year, I think, well, you can't outdo yourself this year because you did such a great job.
But they're bringing people from other countries, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We don't see over here, you know. That Jan is working all the time. I interviewed him earlier today.
Here looking for, guys that we can get.
Right.
And it's not always possible. Sometimes we have to wait 2 or 3
Well, look, you get the guys from Australia coming every year.
Yeah.
And that's quite an accomplishment because it's not cheap to get
her over here. That's right.
You don't even ask them anymore. They just come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have guys from Malaysia. We got a guy from Spain. Everybody's starting to know each other, and it's becoming like a big party every year.
Hey, Paul V. Hill.
Hey, Paul V. Hill. Hi, Duke. Good to see you, man.
Great last night.
Yep, that was another thing, by the way. We can talk about that. Another show there last night that Paul did a good show. Yep.
Paul. Have you talked to him yet?
I haven't had a chance to visit with him a little bit.
So
yeah,
you
just
know.
Kind of going to record something for the podcast.
What you say.
For the podcast.
Don't be careful.
Hey, everyone. How are you?
Sound effects.
That, thank you very much, you know, for entertaining everybody last night. I think
I had a wonderful time.
Yeah, you killed over there. It was interesting that people I heard, they're sitting behind me, were saying, what are you doing card tricks? This is a mind-reading convention, but I thought you did, you know, you start off, no, there's no question. Yeah, no, I thought it was a good mix. It was very good. I just wanted to turn around and say, what are you talking about? It was still awesome.
It was a great show.
It was a great show. Absolutely.
You're playing words of the world to me, guys.
I saw you. When did I see you? I saw you 3 months ago.
2 months
2 months ago, yeah, in your environment, in the ink place. And that was fantastic.
Why don't you tell everybody where you're
at? Yeah, tell us about where you're
working. I'm at Mirage, and I'm in King Ink. I'm there every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. I do about an hour show. It's about 30 minutes of classical magic and 30 minutes of minimalism.
How big is the room, Paul?
People.
Him and his mom.
In that small room, you had about between 30 and 40 people that night.
I usually have about between 30 and 80 people.
So you having you do something over the sound of the tattoo gun or something? Or
yeah, that's not around.
Buzzing. And
I promise that whatever you think of where I work, is not
nothing like
it's
that.
Not what you think.
Not at all.
You walk in and you feel almost like it's a bar,
yes,
as opposed to a tattoo place, and it kind of sort of is.
Yes,
it's like
yes.
a bar area where people wait. I think so. I don't know if they wait, they hang.
Yeah.
Get a tattoo, but they come in to have drinks and enjoy your show and other things as well. I'm sure.
Yep.
Yeah. People wanted to find information on your show. What's the website?
I think it might be kinginklasvegas.com.
They're on your website too, right?
Yep, and it's on my website, www.paulvigil.com, V-I-G-I-L.
Guys, people coming in, we're going to get tickets, buy them at the door, I guess.
It's just a free show. Just come down.
Right?
All that I ask is you support the bar, because the bar supports me.
Yeah, awesome. Okay.
Awesome.
So drink a lot.
I hope so. The show's better.
It really, bar really supports him when he's drinking a lot.
You know? You've had too much time. Get out of here.
Okay, thanks.
I'm kidding.
Awesome.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Again,
so the convention, that was good last evening. We talked about that. Jan had an excellent lecture this morning. The guys had some different ideas and everything, too. And then this afternoon had the panel discussion that was on electronics.
Yeah,
good. Talking about, the future of electronics and what we're doing with it, how much it's being used in minimalism or whatever. You have an opinion on that? You don't use any electronics, really.
Sometimes I do some TV shows in there, yeah. I mean, a few times. I mean, I use some of Craig's stuff. Yeah.
I kind of like what Rick Miles is saying as far as, any method is a viable method. Whatever you have to use in order to get to the effect.
You use electronics for a little bit.
You're using it now.
Tell them the story. If you don't mind.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I don't know which story you're talking about.
I'm talking about where the mail showed up and you thought it was for a year. And you used, somebody else's prop for a week.
Yeah, that's right. That was funny. I had something that Craig had sent, Phil Setti had sent. Beautiful thing. Keith Fields was staying with me. He was coming through for a lecture. And so he said he had a couple of packages that were coming. Had one that came that was addressed to him. And I thought that was, all things were going to be in there. And then a couple days later, another package came that was addressed to me. And
you knew I had been friends with Craig.
Benchick's been friends with Craig for a long time. And so I know that he sends him stuff to kind of practice and work with. And so I got this beautiful thing. And it's like, this was awesome. I thought, well, that's nice of Craig. I need to send him a letter or call him and thank him. I was playing with it. And I took it and worked it at the restaurant and everything, it was a cool thing. But then when Keith got there about a week later and he was staying with me, he said, the package come? I said, yeah, and I gave him that and he'd open it up and he said, great. He said, there happened to be another package. And I said,
oh, wait a minute. In between, you had thanked, didn't you? Thank Craig?
I think I did thank Craig.
Yes,
I did.
Hey, thanks for that thing you sent me.
Yeah.
Left a message.
He's thinking, what?
Yeah.
So then Keith says, I think they had this other thing. I said, what was it exactly? He said, well, it was a die. And that I said, oh, darn. Yes. That was, that was
worked
it.
Well, for a couple of weeks.
It did. Yeah, I loved the thing. I had worked out a couple of routines. And I said, okay, Keith, here's some ideas that you can do with this, that I worked out.
Did you ever tell him you worked it?
I did. No, I told Keith.
So now, otherwise, he knows
just
now.
Worked it. Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. So it was pretty cool.
I worked it in for you.
And then this afternoon, who was this afternoon, Robert?
Ted Kamalovich.
I was going to chat with him, and he said, well, let's get together then tomorrow, because he's just kind of burned out, I guess, right now. Anyhow.
He was great today.
Yeah, it was good. He had a good...
he's closing the show tomorrow.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That'd be great.
Ted, he has so many...
Before Ted,
after lunch? I mean, who was the immediate... I think we did have somebody else.
We had someone before Ted.
Yeah, of course.
course we did. Oh, yeah. We had lunch before that, and before that was Richard Patton with the Night's Tour.
Which is great.
That was it.
Yeah, that was good. Boy, that's a mind blower.
Yeah, and he did it in 6 minutes also.
Yeah.
I mean, he moved through it. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And then Rick Miles and I thought just, of course, did a great job, the different touches and things. And that, I understand where he's coming from now as far as why he's saying this is his farewell. I mean, I understand the health issue and everything and kind of wanting to move on. And the point is, if he doesn't have that spark or that passion, you know, for something, then, you know, as he says, why waste your time? But, you know, even though that he's not on fire, you know, just even the smoldering embers that he might still want to share with us are good enough, you know, that I think that...
Is this leading to a food analogy that you normally
right?
do?
You know me. That's why you're my best friend.
Morning embers, yeah.
That's right.
He's getting fruit. He's always going
to like a novel or something.
No, everything goes to fruit descriptions with him. Almost everything that he does.
I was getting to the steak that's going to be sizzling on,
exactly.
The embers.
See?
See?
Yeah,
yeah. You're anticipating before.
Right, there you go.
How can you read my mind? Why, Banachek, do you do that to me? I guess that's right. That's right. I thought that was funny tonight when he would say, okay, lie to me. What is your name?
Yeah,
that was a good line.
Yeah, he was, you know, took good to tell you guys, he was, you know, took everybody's pulse. He said, okay, you know, lie. But first of all, tell the truth, what's your name? I said, Scott. And they said, okay, I want you to lie. What's your name? He said, Banachek. He said, you're not Banachek. Said,
I know Banachek.
You're no Banachek.
None of us are. I'm not even Banachek. Steve Shaw, yeah.
So he said, so give me another name.
You're a real Banachek.
Everybody stands up. I am Spartacus. But anyhow, lots of fun. Okay, well, you guys have gone on enough. I think you kind of get the general gist of what we're doing. All righty, well, we just kind of quickly got to cut off over there, but we were wrapping up just as I happened to take off the mic. So that's the end of over here at the bar for right now. It's quite late, and so we'll talk to you later. So for tonight, this is Scotty out.
Hey, Scotty here again. Do you have a thought, comment, or suggestion for this podcast? Would you like to have these podcasts longer, shorter, or are they just right? Are there questions that you'd like for me to ask some people during my chats? Do you like the format of my podcasts, and are they easy to download and hear? Post your comments on the Magic Word blog or through iTunes. Or you can send me a direct private message to scott@scottwells.com. You've heard from me, now I look forward to hearing from you. Scotty out.